Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the deep dive. Today, we are tackling a really big one, a figure and a book that asks us to fundamentally rethink a huge chunk of history.
We're diving into Jack Weatherford's Genghis Khan and the making of the modern world.
Yeah, and the title alone tells you this isn't your standard history lesson.
Not at all. I mean, when you hear Genghis Khan, what pops into your head?
Fire, horses, conquest, maybe skulls. You know, the classic image.
Exactly. The bloodthirsty barbarian. And Weatherford basically says, hold on, that image, that's centuries of propaganda, mostly written by the people he conquered, the literate empires, China, Persia, Europe.
Right. They controlled the narrative. So this book flips that.
Completely. Weatherford argues we need to see Khan differently.
As
a visionary leader, an administrator, someone who championed secular law, meritocracy.
And here's the kicker. Maybe laid the groundwork for our modern global system.
That's the core argument. It's not just about revising Khan's image. It's about understanding globalization, leadership, where things like free trade and rule of law might have deeper, unexpected roots.
Okay, this is already fascinating. Before we get into the empire itself, tell us about the author, Jack Weatherford. His background seems really important here.
It absolutely is. He's not your typical military historian recounting battles.
Right.
He's a cultural anthropologist. He was at McAllister College. And that anthropological lens is, I think, the key to the whole book's unique perspective.
How so? What does an anthropologist see differently?
Well, instead of just reading the accounts from, say, terrified European monks or Persian courtiers.
The ones who lost.
Exactly. He tries to understand the nomadic Mongol culture on its own terms, from their perspective, which is incredibly difficult given how few written records they left initially.
So he had to go beyond the usual sources.
Oh, yeah. He spent years doing field work, living and traveling in Mongolia, Central Asia, learning the culture. And crucially, he got access to and could understand the secret history of the Mongols.
The Mongols' own account.
Pretty much. It's his foundational insider text about Khan's rise in the early empire. That gives a perspective you just don't get from outsiders who saw them purely as destroyers.
Okay, that context is vital. It lets him build this, well, pretty radical central idea.
It is radical. The big thesis is Genghis Khan, despite the brutality, was a revolutionary secular force whose conquests inadvertently created the essential conditions for the modern world.
That's a huge claim. Visionary. Secular. How does Weatherford connect the dots between conquest and modernity?
He argues the conquests weren't just mindless violence. They shattered old, stagnant, aristocratic systems across Eurasia. Feudalism, hereditary privilege. Khan broke them.
Okay, broke them. But replaced them with what?
That's the key. He argues Khan, and especially his successors, replaced them with principles that look surprisingly modern. Meritocracy promoting based on skill, not birth.
We'll come back to that.
The Yasa, a written secular code of law that applied to everyone. Religious tolerance, believe it or not, as state policy.
Religious tolerance from right. Genghis Khan.
Yes, pragmatic tolerance. It was easier to rule a vast, diverse empire if you didn't force religion on people. And crucially, a focus on global commerce over just local protectionism.
So, the violence. Weatherford sees it as, what, a necessary evil? Creative destruction?
Something like that. A horrific, brutal catalyst that cleared the way for these new systems and ultimately connected the world.
Connected how?
Through the Mongol Empire itself. It created the first truly global system of trade and communication. The Pax Mongolica, the Mongol peace.
Right, secured trade routes.
Secured them like never before. This stability, this flow of goods and ideas across continents. Mm. Weatherford argues that directly fueled the European Renaissance and the Age of Discovery. The Mongols basically jump-started globalization.
So they weren't necessarily inventors, but they were incredible organizers and connectors.
Exactly. Their genius was logistical and administrative, applied on an unprecedented scale.
Okay, let's rewind a bit. Talk about the man himself. Temujin, before he became Genghis Khan, his early life sounds brutal.
It's an almost unbelievable story of hardship. His father, a minor chief, was poisoned.
Okay.
And then his own clan just abandoned him. Him, his mother, his siblings, left them for dead on the steppe. He was hunted, even enslaved for a time.
Wow. So he experienced the absolute worst of the existing tribal system. Betrayal, aristocracy failing him.
Precisely. And Weatherford argues that this formative trauma is what forged his later values. His intense emphasis on loyalty, unbreakable bonds.
And meritocracy, because the old aristocratic system failed him.
Absolutely. He saw how birthright meant nothing if there wasn't loyalty or competence. So later, when he built his power, he promoted people based on skill and loyalty alone. Generals like Subutai, who came from nothing.
That makes sense. So how did he go from outcast to unifying the Mongol tribes?
Through sheer will, charisma, and strategic genius. He gathered followers, defeated rivals one by one. Then in 1206, this great assembly, the Kurultai, proclaims him Genghis Khan, the universal ruler.
And this is where the radical changes start.
Immediately. He didn't just become the leader. He fundamentally reorganized Mongol society. The decimal system for the army, for instance.
Units of 10, 100, and 1,000.
Right. But it wasn't just military efficiency. It deliberately broke up old tribal loyalties. Men from different clans were forced to fight and live together, loyal only to the Khan and their unit.
And the Yasa Code came in then, too.
Yes, this written law. And it was revolutionary because it was largely secular. It covered everything from theft and adultery to military discipline, and importantly, the rules of diplomacy and trade. Banned kidnapping women, enslaving fellow Mongols.
Applied to everyone equally, even the elite.
That was the principle, a radical departure from arbitrary feudal justice. It provided a common legal framework for the new nation.
Okay, so he builds this unified disciplined state. Then comes the expansion, the Mongol World War. Weatherford argues this wasn't just random conquest, right? He uses the Khwarazmian campaign as an example.
Yeah, this is a pivotal moment. Genghis Khan sent a trade caravan, envoys really, to the neighboring Khwarazmian Empire in Central Asia, basically offering peaceful trade relations.
Okay, seems reasonable.
The Sultan there, arrogant, dismissive. He had the chief envoy executed and the merchants killed. A massive violation of diplomatic norms even then.
And Khan's reaction?
Total war.
Yeah.
Absolute devastating annihilation of the Khwarazmian Empire. Millions died, cities razed.
That seems disproportionate.
Yeah.
For killing some envoys.
It seems that way. But Weatherford frames it differently. For Khan, this wasn't just an insult. It was an attack on the very foundation of his vision, secure, open trade across the world. Protecting merchants and envoys was paramount. The extreme response was meant as a deterrent, a message. Mongol trade routes will be safe.
A brutal form of international relations policy.
You could say that. And what's amazing is their military adaptability during these campaigns. They start as nomadic horse archers.
Right, masters of steppe warfare.
But they quickly become experts at siege warfare. How? They captured engineers, artisans, scholars from conquered peoples, especially the Chinese. They learned, adapted, adopted the best tech. Siege engines, gunpowder tactics.
So they weren't just destroyers, they were absorbers of knowledge and technology.
Constantly learning, constantly improving their methods. They were pragmatic above all else.
And the scale of their campaigns is just mind-boggling. That reconnaissance mission by Jebi and Subutai.
Oh, incredible. They lead this cavalry force on a massive loop around the Caspian Sea, through the Caucasus, defeating Russian princes, Georgians, basically scouting out Eastern Europe.
And that set the stage for the invasion of Europe later.
It did. Decades later, under Khan's son Ogedei, the Mongols swept into Russia, Poland, Hungary. They were winning decisively. Europe seemed poised to fall.
But it didn't. Why?
This is one of history's great what-ifs. Ogedei Khan, the great Khan ruling from the capital Karakorum, died unexpectedly in 1241. Yeah. And Mongol tradition was ironclad on this. When the great Khan died, all the princes of the bloodline, all the senior generals, had to return to Mongolia for the Kurultai to elect a successor.
So the armies in Europe just stop, turned around.
They had to. Subutai was deep in Hungary, poised to potentially invade Western Europe, and he had to withdraw his forces for the succession crisis. Europe was essentially saved by Ogedei's death and Mongol political tradition.
Wow, that's a detail you don't often hear. Okay, so Ogedei dies, but before that, he's the one who really builds the institutions of the Pax Mongolica after the initial conquest phase.
Exactly. If Genghis was the conqueror and unifier, Ogedei was the administrator. He established the permanent capital at Karakorum, formalized the bureaucracy.
And they built the yam system. Tell us more about that. It sounds crucial.
The yam. It's hard to overstate its importance. Think of it as the world's first pony express combined with FedEx on a continental scale.
Right.
They set up relay stations, stocked with horses and supplies, every 20, 30 miles across the entire empire, from China to Russia.
Thousands of miles.
Tens of thousands. An official messenger with a peza, a special medallion, could get fresh horses at each station and ride day and night. They could cover maybe 200 miles a day.
Unheard of speed back then.
Completely. It meant orders, intelligence, news, and crucially, technology and ideas could travel across Eurasia faster than ever before. It was the information superhighway of the 13th century.
And this connected empire facilitated the economic boom.
Absolutely. The yam wasn't just for government messages. It supported trade. The Mongols didn't just conquer the Silk Road. They secured it, policed it, made it safe.
Like Marco Polo's travels.
Exactly. Yeah. They eliminated all the local tolls and tariffs that used to strangle long-distance trade, created this vast free trade zone, these standardized weights, measures, even experimented with paper money backed by the state.
It's amazing. An administrative and economic revolution happening alongside the military one.
And that leads to this incredible cultural exchange, especially at the capital, Karakoram.
Oh, Gay's capital. What was it like?
Apparently incredibly cosmopolitan. Remember that policy of religious tolerance?
Right, pragmatic tolerance.
It meant you had Christian monks, Muslim scholars, Buddhist lamas, Confucian officials, Taoist priests, all living and working there, debating, advising the Khan, sharing knowledge.
A real melting pot of ideas.
A forced melting pot, maybe, but yes. And this concentration of expertise led to a massive transfer of knowledge. Medicine, astronomy, mathematics, engineering, ideas flowed freely within the empire.
And crucially, from east to west.
That's Weatherford's big point. Technologies that were mature in China, like gunpowder, the compass, printing methods, traveled west rapidly along these Mongol-secured routes.
Not just slow diffusion, but an accelerated transfer.
Yes, facilitated by the Mongol communication network and the sheer scale of the empire connecting these previously isolated regions. He argues this influx of Eastern tech and knowledge was a direct catalyst for the European Renaissance and Age of Discovery.
It really forces you to rethink the narrative of European exceptionalism.
Completely. Okay, yeah. So let's go back and look at the big themes here. What are the key takeaways that still resonate?
Well, the first one has to be meritocracy over aristocracy, promoting based on skill and loyalty like Khan did with generals like Subutai.
Even if they came from humble origins.
Right, that focus on effectiveness over birthright. It's a timeless lesson for any organization, isn't it? Modern business, teams, anything. Build the best team based on what people can do.
Spot on. Mm. And the second theme, religious tolerance is pragmatic policy. It wasn't necessarily about belief, it was about stability.
Yeah, governing a vast multi-ethnic, multi-religious empire,
yeah,
fighting religious wars would have been incredibly costly and destabilizing.
Much more efficient to just let people practice their faiths, maybe exempt religious leaders from taxes, and keep the peace. Contrast that with the constant religious strife in Europe at the time.
It makes the Mongols look surprisingly modern in their approach to governance.
In some ways, yes. And the third big theme, tying back to the title, the unifier of worlds. Globalization's precursor.
They literally broke down the walls between civilizations.
China, Persia, Europe. They were connected politically, economically, culturally for the first time under one system. It established the foundations for the interconnected world we live in now, whether we realize it or not.
And maybe a fourth theme, questioning the narrative. Always asking who wrote the history and why.
Definitely. This book is a masterclass in that. History is so often written by the victors, or in this case, the literate conquered, who had their own agendas.
Okay, let's touch on some memorable lines or concepts from the book that really crystallize these ideas.
There are quite a few. One that highlights the paradox is something like, the Mongols made no technological breakthroughs, founded no new religion. Yet, Genghis Khan was the greatest conqueror in history.
Right, emphasizing their genius wasn't invention, it was organization, logistics. Systems.
Exactly. They took existing things and scaled them up, managed them better than anyone before.
Which in itself is a kind of innovation.
A powerful one. And then there's the main thesis, stated baldly. More than anyone else, the Mongols created the modern world in which we live.
That's the line designed to make you stop and think, isn't it?
Absolutely. It forces the reevaluation.
And on a practical level, that detail about the pesa, the gold tablet for merchants.
Oh yeah, the Mongol passport.
Basically. A merchant carrying one had guaranteed safe passage, supplies, lodging across the entire empire, from the Mediterranean to the Pacific.
It just highlights the incredible security and commitment they provided for commerce. That little tablet represented the power and reach of the entire Mongol system.
So, how can we apply these insights today? What are the real-life applications for us?
Well, in leadership and management, look at Khan's adaptability. He had a clear vision unifying the tribes, creating this empire. But he was flexible in how he did it.
Like adopting siege techniques or administrative practices from others.
Exactly. He learned from everyone, even conquered peoples. The lesson. Have a strong vision, but be willing to adapt your methods. Learn from diverse sources, even your rivals. Don't be rigid.
And on a personal level, Temujin's own story?
It's an incredible story of personal resilience. From abandoned outcast, slave even, to ruler of the largest land empire ever, it's the ultimate example that your origins don't have to dictate your destiny. Overcoming adversity is possible.
That's powerful.
And then there's the geopolitics angle. The Pax Mongolica shows the double-edged sword of globalization.
How so?
While those secure, efficient trade routes spread prosperity, technology, knowledge, fantastic stuff.
What?
But those exact same routes, that same interconnectedness, later allowed the Black Death to spread from Asia to Europe with devastating speed and efficiency.
Wow. The connections that bring benefits also carry risks.
Always. A timeless lesson for our own hyper-connected world. The rewards and risks travel together.
Okay, wrapping up. What's your final, most surprising takeaway from diving into this book?
For me, maybe it's the sheer effectiveness of the YAM system. We think of technology as electronics, but this was organizational technology at its peak. The ability to manage information and logistics over vast distances was their superpower. It wasn't just brute force, it was brilliant administration.
Yeah, that logistical genius is often overlooked. For me, the biggest takeaway is that core challenge to Eurocentric history. The realization that ideas we consider foundational to modern meritocracy, secular law, maybe even aspects of free trade weren't born solely in Europe.
But were actively implemented on a massive scale by a nomadic people from Central Asia, long dismissed as just barbarians.
It forces a fundamental rethink of where progress comes from. It didn't just flow west.
Definitely. It makes you realize history is far more complex and interconnected than the simple narratives were often taught. The Mongols weren't just a storm that passed. They reshaped the landscape permanently.
A powerful note to end on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.